Any use that government plans to make of those CLB facilities, those production facilities that you know of?
I'm not, I don't have that much knowledge. I know there was quite a bit of activity to convert over. I was in Chubb at the time that final decision was made to turn that back, open that back up to the bids to dispose of the tubing. And I know it was, the shovel went in, for example, and picked up quite a few of the items, autoclaves, a lot of the equipment that was originally used. The land will revert back. The steel will be salvaged and generally, you know, all the equipment will be salvaged. So it's my understanding, I guess you'd have to check with somebody who was in closing down period of the Saturday to find out about that, what the intention was to use.
Okay, so that takes care of one of my big questions. Now, can you tell me a little bit about explosive forming of gore segments? Apparently they started doing that and decided that, they kept doing that. That was one of the things they kept up doing.
Yes, that was in the early development days. No one knew the best way to form a large bulkhead. Either explosive forming, or bulge, or stretch, or there were about three or four different ways that they attempted to form a bulkhead.
Did Boeing use that for the F-1C? I should have asked Matt Erlob that.
Yes,
I was
should.
Talking to him this morning. I'm calling back, I guess.
I don't believe any contractor wound up explosive forming. I believe they were all bulge forming eventually.
I guess it, yeah. So that,
if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But
well, they did a lot of experimenting with explosive forming.
Yes.
But you're not sure if they actually used those in production birds.
No, I'm not. I'm not sure either way.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't remember that well enough to give you a
problem. Well, there's a problem because, as you say, this occurred earlier on when you were
talking. Yes, it was well past me, in fact.
Yeah. Well, that pertains into another question I had, and that was the...
William Rotzik now may remember.
Okay, I'll try that.
You might try that on him.
Another question kind of related to that was the... after they formed these... Well, back to the production, of course, segments themselves. Sometimes they just turn the explosive formed them and then they can mill them down the set. And then, and I'm not sure about this, but I'm trying to find out. A friend decided that wasn't going to do it, so they machine milled them in the flat and then they bulge formed them.
They did it both ways.
Yeah. I wasn't sure once they finally wound up with that.
Was a matter of almost of individual choice. Either Kim mill after or before, I believe.
Well, on the S4B, as I recall, they milled them in the flat and then formed them. I think that's right.
I believe that's right.
And I can check that out. I've got some Douglas papers that do a
little bit. Right. You can confirm how each one was done. And each one was done as a result of a long experiment. Element of the country, the IDWA, Interwoven Department. The North American people use Long Beach. Douglas had another group who did their bulge forming for all projects.
Up in Santa Monica, I think they get a lot of stuff. Yeah. Okay, now here's something you can help me out with. What is the significance of the dual plane separation sequence on the SD?
Okay, we'll keep it fairly simple. Again, I would suggest you would check that with Willie from Rotzik. Willie was, again, in the middle of that. But the basic reason for the dual plane separation was a concern for clearance of the S2 engines.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at the alternatives. If the interstage were left attached to the first stage, the S1C, the S2 would have to fly out, you might say, coast out. Okay.
Is that called fire in the hole?
That's called fire in the hole. Or you could use Ullage motors and fire it after it was out of the hole, but then you've got an attitude control problem. Okay.
Around in there and
the
sides and back
in there. The concern, well, firing the hole is just one way to get out. You can fire up Ullage motors and coast out,
mm-hmm.
or you can fire in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, you come out of the hole with engines. You know the S2 engines are spread out. And so you've got that lateral clearance concern. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with the S2 is that it separated while there was a positive atmospheric pressure, or Q level, or Q pressure we call it, mm-hmm. Q, mm-hmm. that was sufficiently high to give you atmospheric disturbances during separation. Now, all of these are calculations, of course, many, many calculations on different disturbance factors, tipping of the S1C because you just shut it down, and how many propellants are going to boil out of the chamber, you know, and will it continue to cough and puff, and will it kick? And as the S2 starts up, you know, will you have a disturbance factor because of the Ullage motor not firing, or what? These many concerns led to the desire to separate with the skirt, you know, down at the S1C and leave it intact to the S2 and fly for a while with it until you got out of the cube, out of the atmosphere, out of the aerodynamic pressure region, and then kick it off. So that's the basic reason. Carrying it with you, and of course, you have a performance degradation if you carry it all the way. You do kick
right.
it off.
Right. But even
and
so,
you also have temperature problems because if you radiate to it and back in, you see to the engine, so you like to get rid of
but
it.
But you don't have to get rid of it. And even so, I don't remember the dimensions, but it's a fairly narrow clearance even getting rid of the rest of that skirt, that lower
right.
skirt, half skirt area.
So. Right, and there was a sweaty thing there that we had to worry about a little bit. We photographed it, of course, the separation, and saw it was a nice clean separation where we separated the cup and the
I remember seeing the photograph of that.
Very dramatic.
Wow,
yeah.
Sure is.
And you get to see the, you know, the earth
thing
below.
Falling,
and
falling away.
Completely clear hydrogen plume.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see the plume. You don't see the hydrogen plume. You see through it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You probably didn't think about it.
No, I really didn't. I just remember, as I recall.
You're looking at the earth, and you know, you see no disturbance, no
yeah,
heat waves or anything.
That thing falls away, the little chunks of ice that are falling around it too, it's a beautiful,
mm-hmm.
really a beautiful dramatic shot. I've seen of that.
Yeah,
very,
it's
very
it's a favorite shot that people use.
Oh God, yeah. Yeah, I've shown lots of Apollo Saturn films, and I teach courses in history of technology, and I've always do a week on the aerospace thing, and I've shown several NASA films of that thing.
Did you see the films of the separation of the S4B pulling away with the engine light?
No.
The cameras in front of the S2, and they look on the S4B, and it pulls away, beautiful and stable. And then there is the chill down, you know, you see a puff come out of the engine, and you see a light. Yeah, you look right in the engine exhaust.
Okay, and I raised another question, I really haven't thought about it. How in the difference is the S4B separation?
It's out of the atmosphere. It's,
but what about...
It flies out of the skirt leaves, stays attached to the S2. And
so
the separation plane... Separation plane, it flies out of the hole. So you got center engine. You got a big.
Oh, it's only right. So
in fact, the skirt has to taper inward to
right.
reach it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you got an enormous area down there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So there's no concern there for it. At least the concern was certainly not sufficient there. Warning second.
And also on the separation plane between the S1C and the S2. I was wondering how much that top bulkhead of the S1C comes up there and creates an additional, you know, bulge up in there. If it's any more than the S2 bulge up in this area, maybe not. Those are both semi-electrical.
Yeah, I've been
bulkhead.
I've been
that
probably. I've been in the stack of the cave. I can't remember the clearance, but it's certainly that.
It may not be that much. Well, anyway, that helps me with the dual separation. I've got all kinds of stuff about the beauty of dual separation.
Oh,
none
of
it ever told me why.
It's complex.
So
you wouldn't do it unless you felt you had to. And there were arguments that you didn't have to, that it wouldn't collide naturally. There are always differing views on all these technical issues, depending. Some of them are hard to call. You know? It depends on your assumptions. How much of a safety factor do you allow for this factor? And what are the maximum wind shears in any one flight
mm-hmm.
that would contribute towards tip-off.
Mm-hmm.
There must be a dozen things you have to treat, or sometimes 15 or 20 major factors to treat, and the assumptions you make on each one tend to add up to an answer, and of course people make different assumptions to get different answers. So second plane separation was one of the chewed upon technical issues
mm-hmm.
during the Saturn V development. And there were, and it was one of the major technical well known
mm-hmm.
and well chewed over.
One of the other questions I heard, items I had down here was old quote unquote a new quote unquote technology on the S2, because it was a state that did have some nice problems. And I guess they've already kind of answered that, I guess. It wasn't so much as the S2 had all kinds of new technology on it, maybe just the fact that, again, this gauge
it was,
of the
and
so on.
Well, the new things on S2, of course, was extremely lightweight structure, the new insulation. But it was a cluster hydrogen stage.
Yeah. And what problems did that? Well, the S4 had clustered RL-10s on it.
Yes. It had clustered RL-10s, indeed.
Six of them?
I believe it was six.
Yeah,
six
of them.
But there weren't, the RL-10, of course, in its accurate settle down, was a very, well, it performed very dependably and without wide excursions from one flight to the other. I'd say the J2 was lead time between, even though we flew the J2 first on 201, 203, you know, before we flew it on 501.
Right.
Even though we had those earlier flights, the first clustering of those five J2s was somewhat of a problem. We did, the battleship firings did uncover a few cluster problems.
What? You remember what?
Temperature problems.
High temperatures.
High temperatures.
Would this degrade the electrical harnesses and stuff that were down around the engines or something? Where were the temperature problems?
I don't recall. I believe most of them. In fact, I came on just after the battleship firings. I came on after the battleship firings were complete. And we're not, this is the secondhand knowledge.
Yeah, okay, that's right.
There weren't too many serious problems uncovered. Certainly none were none. They did not uncover, unfortunately, the centrifugal essence. I told you. Because that was a structural problem as well as a propulsion problem. I think some of the problems were that many of the propulsion, the stage devices, the valves, were still being developed and still being shaken down. They were somewhat larger than some of those that we had used on the S4B. And we had a combination of many, many components and a few system problems. The job of firing the cluster stage, getting everything all ready, five engines in the start box. Boy, start boxes were very demanding. You know what start boxes?
No. Before you do that, let me ask another question. One thing that's interesting to me about the program is that you start theoretically with tested hardware, like an H1.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, what's the problem then with making a bigger engine out of it, an F1? But you can't extrapolate from a used piece of hardware to a larger one without inducing other problems, because all of the geometric progression of flow rates of gases, of propellants, or whatever, creates new stresses and unknown problems.
You end up having
generalization.
That's certainly true, and you usually can't scale up. You usually have to change the way the system operates, one way or some critical fashion.
Scaling always introduces other.
Scaling usually introduces enough problems that you change the way the pumps operate. For example, H1 and the F1 were quite different engines in many respects.
Okay, anyway, now what are the start boxes?
Start boxes are the temperature pressure limits. Have a box consisting of pressure, lower and upper pressure range,
okay,
and temperature, lower and upper temperatures. And each, and the engine has the two pump inlets must be within certain conditions,
right,
so that you guarantee the propellants are of sufficient quality to give you a reliable start.
Mm-hmm.
Starting is always a sweat on the engine. When you got five in a cluster,
you got five more.
To get those propellants right, you have to have well insulated suction tank,
right,
in the engine. You can't have heat leaks. For example, the S2 used the vacuum insulated suction lines. And heaven help you, they were big, they were in several pieces, you know, they were wrapped all around, and you said a plumber's nightmare a while ago. So those were big suction lines, each vacuum insulated. Now the S4B only had two lines. We only had two to watch. It had 10.